Accession number 30095, reel 4.
And he said, we're now getting the same thing now, aren't we? You know, from the, so they're still not giving his troops the right background. I mean, to me, do you read that one about the some of them putting them into ordinary hospitals? Did you read that? I mean, we used to have proper naval and army hospitals. They've been putting them into ordinary wards. And apparently some Muslim women went for this corporal, came to see his soldiers that were wounded, and hassled him, you know, about being in, fighting our people in Iraq, and killing them right at the centre. I mean, the attitude, they should never be like that. See, it didn't help. And they're not getting the right treatment. They shouldn't be in a civil hospital. I mean, they need to be in a military hospital, which is purely for their types of illness, not a general hospital. So I do think the government hasn't been playing proper. I mean, the condition. I get papers which you wouldn't see in the Corps, but the government have got a clue now. None of them have ever been in the forces. How can they be ministers of war and so forth? And sending these chaps out there without proper equipment. I was reading my thing, the new one yesterday. The air support in Afghan is ghastly. You see, if you're having two attacks going on, they have to decide which one wants air support first because they haven't got enough. What are we doing sending men out there without, like this? I mean, they're not going to win that war. My father was in the Afghan war, and he said he'd never win. Russia never won, did they? They are people like that. And they're not giving them equipment. I mean, some of these Land Rovers they've found aren't armour plated. I mean, it's crazy. They get blown up. No wonder it kills them. They're just not, the equipment's not there. And the Admiralties now, some of the admirals are having a go at them now. And I got one there in the House of Lords debate about welcoming. This particular baron was welcoming our Marines back from Afghan. What a great job they did. Well, they did. Tremendous job, you know. But when he finished, Viscount Sims got up. My God. But it is true that nowadays the deaths is supported. And he's all about the hospital as well. And according to my regiment now, we are 580 short. Of Marines moment. What is, I don't know. Whether parents sort of discourage a son joining the Corps because they know they might be sent abroad again. Don't mind for our country, but when you're fighting somebody else's war, you know, and not getting very well with it, you can understand peasant about joining the army or the Marines. I mean, because the standards are obviously in the court very high. I mean, according to that, they've done very well. I know they have. You know, did you hear about the food parcels? We had a message just before Christmas this year, or last year rather, because they were out in Afghan, then the Corps was about 3,000 and all that, maybe half the regiment. And they said they need food parcels. And so we said, gosh, they said the food parcels we sent out to them. They told what they wanted, you know. And I had letters, personal letters from various Marines and sergeants thanking us for the gifts we sent them, you know. And so naturally, because we're the Corps like that, you know, it was the Marine, always the Marine, it's one of the slogans we have. And apparently they were full of pride for this and very good. Soften the blow a bit out there, but they work very hard. But it's a shame because they've been in the Corps spread all over the world. When I read them there, wherever they are, they're all over the place, you know. But then they find they're not being supported properly by the arm, by the MOD. I heard yesterday, we had a meeting yesterday, and our president, the colonel, said that. A statement's been made that had Argentina carried out their invasion of Falkland Islands 3 months later, we wouldn't have won because of the Navy had been cut down.
which they have been cut down. And the Admiralty or Naval officers or senior Admiralty are up in arms about this business, you know. I mean, that submarine they just launched just now, 4 years out of time, money. But to me, defence is vital. That's how I feel about it. You know, taxation, I know it's a dreadful thing like that, but defence is a priority. This country is an island. And if we're not strong, we'll be attacked. That's my philosophy. If anyone is strong, they don't do anything. Especially with all the troubles we're having now with terrorists as well, you know. It's very sad. But it seems the biggest trouble, I think, is that they don't like America. Their name, of course, people are bad. And we're suffering for it. I mean, you talk about... thing between us and America, the bond, etc. A friend of mine went a bit to America, Canada last year, and to go into Russia, into America now, even though you're Canadian, you have to have a passport. She said, no, I was going down to visit my friend down there. She said, I had to queue up for hours to get a passport to go across the border. I mean, it's not very friendly, is it? I mean, you know, they just not popular. Seem to be looking out for themselves and everybody else. There we are. That's another story.
Could you talk a bit more about the role of the Marines aboard ships and how they relate to the Navy personnel?
Yes. Talking about a big ship, that's the best way. Well, it's always called a barracks. Is the Marine quarters, because in the old days they were there to stop sailors attacking them, the officers, you see. So it's still called a barracks, in quote. But your job is, you have to do your gunnery, of course. You have to do your duties on board ship, cookhouse as well, watches, you've got the door watching, same as everybody else, you know, clean the decks and so forth, looking after the messes. And the only difference is that Marines always ban the keyboard. They call them keyboard sentry. That's all the keys, and you can't get those out of the Marine. They've been there to sign in and sign off for the security. And they also, this is banned aboard. They've probably got the Marine band as well. But you're just a sailor, really. But you're a soldier too. But you, of course, and then if you do landings, the Navy take you ashore in the craft they've got on board, you know. Unless it's a landing craft, in which case then you've got Marines to do that themselves. And so I think it's just, a sailor probably does more. Well, yes, but you see, you don't get Marines in the engine room. You don't get Marines doing signals. The Navy got their own signals. Although you've got signal people on board, obviously, for wartime or for landing purposes, but they don't actually man the signal side of it. But they certainly do all the other jobs on board ship.
What would the relations be like between the Marines and the sailors?
Oh, I think it's friendly, I think. You know, we put each other's leg up, you know, matelots and so forth. But I think when it comes down to it, that's nothing more than that. No. I think maybe it'd be difficult in the old days when they really were in the barracks to stop the sailors mutiny, you know, because there's a mutiny on board, of course, they would then come straight in as soldiers and stop it, you know. But I think they pull each other's leg, you know, they call us bootnecks and we call them Jolly Rogers and whatever, things like that, you know. But no, it's fine. I think it's the fact that you're a Navy, especially now because it's been merged much closer now. Beforehand, although you were part of the Navy, the Marine was quite a section at home. But now it's all combined now. And you've got a naval lieutenant probably on doing duties in a barracks and Marines, you know, the connection is much closer now. It's just Royal Navy, full stop now.
When aboard HMS Kent, say, how would you spend your off duty time?
Well, they used to put you used to have a lot of film shows. But other than that, you no drinking rooms, there's no bar. There's a canteen. Go to a canteen. Some meal times, obviously, if you want to. But and of course, a lot of time to sleep as well. But you know, you do 8 hours, 8 hour shifts. You're very tired after 8 hours doing watching and so forth. On the bridge there, in New York, you know, if you've got your goggles there, and what you call it, telescopes and things like that, and you're all the time sweeping like this, you know, looking for submarine, sign submarine and so forth. Very tiring. But and you do look out business, of course. You always look out all the time in case of accidents and so forth. But I really don't know. I can't remember what we did for pleasure other than that. And play cards and cross a lot and some games as well. You know, games on board as well. You know, things like that to keep you occupied.
What were the rations like?
Well. In that thing I gave you, I'll give you an idea of what we had. It was pretty awful. But the food was not too bad. The only funny thing I ever remember was a visit from the, I think it was the captain's, it was the captain's Christmas rounds, that's right. He said the rounds of Christmas. And we all hung tins of sardines up for the decade. Because we were fed up with seeing herring and tomato sauce, that's the one. That they when you're a long time at sea, it's a lot of tin food, you know, but you had to put up with it. But basically, not too bad. I think it's much better now, of course. I mean, they don't have hammocks now, do they? We used to have hammocks, they were all bunks today. And they're very comfortable, believe it or not, because especially in rough sea, you're stationary, you swing nicely. But now they've got most of the bunks now, I think, so a bit more up to date now. But you had to wash down the decks every your turn to do it, you know. Cleaning the guns, of course, was a big job. And they all, every day they'd be cleaned properly, made sure they were working order. It seemed to be plenty to do, really. But I think it's you're always glad to get home to a port, really, because it's quite a lonely life, really. But you all get on well, you all realise you're all there to help each other, you know. That's the sort of spirit, isn't it?
Could you talk a bit more about the layout of HMS Kent?
Well, you've got a large engine room down below, and I've been over that just a visit really. Then you've got the magazine for all the ammunition at Kent, and then you've got the mess decks. You've got the naval mess decks, the petty officers' mess, you've got the stokers. I mean, they don't stoke today, but they still call stokers. They had their own mess deck. They were always the best friends with the Royal Marines. I think it's because their mess deck was next. I don't know, but there's always some feeling about comradeship between the stokers and the Marines. Probably because they weren't sailors as such. I don't know, but I mean, that's just another story. And then you've got the various mess decks as well, and then you've got the officers' quarters, which are very nice. And then you've got your main deck, where you've bad weather, you have put ropes up for protection and so forth. And then you've got the bridge and the lake and all the lookouts and what have you there. Basically, yes, that's what most warships are like, really. You have anti-aircraft guns down the side as well, as one of the main big problems. Of course, we don't have guns today. It's all rockets. I mean, I went aboard the Belfast down there to visit, and got shield guns with him. And another one came alongside, they all can do. And I said, what's that? A destroyer? Where's it? We don't have guns, it's all rockets. And you can see them. There's no gun now as there used to be. Well, it's a different world altogether, isn't it? It was then. But I don't know what they're like today. In the old days, that's how it was, the decks were well, and so forth. And you obviously had armour plating, but because if you get hit amidships, you know, and hit the engine room and so forth, and all the magazine would have to go, you know. But Kent wasn't very heavily armed, funny enough, because she was ready, as I said, she was China station, ready, she built for the Far East. But however, we survived. I think the biggest one we had, which I didn't tell you about, was when we were chasing the Tirpitz or Charnel, the one that they sank off North France.
Tirpitz, you've written here.
That was to stop the Tirpitz coming through, I think, wasn't it? Coming through the straits, wasn't it? No, I think it was a Scharnhorst. I forgot the name now. I remember we were at sea and we got a signal that a pocket battleship, one of the pocket battleships, got through the straits, and we were ordered to chase after her. And the Norfolk was ahead of us. She was nearer than we were when we turned. And I remember we were 3 days closed up, as we call it. I was in the chill bin 3 solid days. Food was brought down to us, rations, because we and the whole gun crew was all at their stations for 3 days, and Norfolk was ahead of us. Norfolk hit it first. They hit it first. The time we got there, we were way behind. We were in the middle of the Atlantic, in the Arctic somewhere. They just finished their day, sunk her. You know, do you remember that one? They came through the straits and they chased her towards France, and they sank her. I don't think it was Tirpitz. I think Tirpitz one we were stopping coming through. We knew she was in Norway. I think it was a Scharnhorst, I'm not sure. It's not on my report there. But it's in the history book, you want to check it. It was a big chase and they sank her in the end, you know. But that was quite hairy, because you knew I was the lowest part of the ship. And I hope in hell if we were hit, you know, we would have gone, really. But neither of nor were us were hit, but we managed to get through, and it was all over. That was that.
What was the size of Kent's? How big was Kent's crew?
Ooh. Oh yes, 685. That's the details of the Kent. The class that I was on, of course.
That's the combined Marines and
Sailors. I would think so. I think the detachment Marines were about. I think the detachment Marines would have been about, 50 or something like that. I can't remember how many of us were on board. So our main principle was to man X turret. That was our biggest job here. And they also manned some of the anti-aircraft guns, as well, the 6-inch ones.
Were all the ships of that class given a Marine complement?
Oh, yes. That particular one, yes. Because they don't have them on board now. We don't go on the warships now, unless they are to do with landing craft, you know. Like the HMS Ocean one, I think, latest one. But for the ordinary war battleship, as we call it, they really don't go on it now. They're all a very small complement that can do landing, quick landing, that they are doing in what's the one that they just had all the trouble with? Victoria, what was her name? The one that had the 15 were captured. Cornwall. Actually, it was Cornwall. She's I don't know what class is, a cruiser now? I'm not quite sure. They have all different names now. But they had a Marine complement, but their main job was landing on salt boats, you know. But not necessarily on being gun crews.
And then when it came to the...
See, most of the Marines now are commanders now. That's the difference, you see, now. I mean, they started at the beginning, at the end of the last war, or halfway through the last war. They started commandos. So that's the biggest role of the Marines today, is commandos now. And of course, the naval defence involved with that. That's the things you saw, usually small craft doing raids and stuff like that, patrolling. So I'm sorry, I interrupted.
When it came to the LCGs, were they run entirely by the Marines?
No, they weren't. No. There you had a naval complement which consisted of the skipper and the first lieutenant, and then you had the coxswain, he's naval, the motor mechanic, they called him, any petty officer, and then you've got the signals officer, signalman, and about two or three sailors, the rest of the Marines. But you can probably have to muck into everything, you know.
And what was the crew size of those? How big was the crew on those?
Oh, I suppose, including the skipper, one, two, three, four, five, not more than a dozen, doubtfully a dozen. And we were about 35 strong. But you're all part of the crew, really, you know. There's just a couple of seamen, like ordinary seamen, who just did all the chores of tying up and that sort of thing, you know. But, otherwise, you just had to keep mess deck, mostly Marines, really. And they were gunboats. Very effective, really.
The main function was to support the landing ships.
Absolutely. That was the first job you saw in there. Then the second one came up, where they raised the rear gun up. Because the difficulty was we could never fire forward, except for one gun. And they later developed by putting a platform. So the second gun was higher than the first one. And I think I've got a picture of that. That was the Mark IV. You see the gun is raised on that one. There's still the old tank Lenny craft, you know, basically. There's the same pictures, I think. But that was very useful, because they could fire over your head if they were deployed, and they could have only fired at an angle. So there must have been quite a few of them, you know, because they...
How close to the shore would they operate?
We can go right in almost, yes. I mean, we used to... Sometimes you made a mistake and found yourself high and dry, like we did once before. But they get very shallow draft. I got a picture of do you want to put it on again? Sorry. That one there is my sitting on the well deck there, and there my crew around me. That's the barrel of the gun there. That was taken, I think I've taken in the middle, I think, that one. That's the shipmate I was talking to you about, that was with me. There she is. Oh. That's high and dry. The landing ship tank is here. Now you can see there's the water line, look. So it's not all that shallow, you see, but not deep, not really deep. You get fairly close. But that's that one. I don't think there's any other interest. That's another one of my crew. That's the mid.
How manoeuvrable were they? How manoeuvrable were they?
What,
the LCGs?
Well, pretty awful. She got two propellers, helped you bring around, but she wasn't very fast. I mean, it weren't made for that. Forgot what knotted it up, it's not very fast. And but the trouble was is to try and hold her steady, because she's being flat bottom, you know what I like. And but you could turn around, I suppose, in a fairly good arc, not sharp, but you could turn with one propeller and the other one going in reverse, you know, bring around that way with a rudder out like that. But they're funny things to go on. They were never made to go long distance, really. They were made to go across the channel, no doubt about that. And it's amazing how the engines lasted. Because, you know, after D-Day, some of my flotilla, we went to get ready to go to India. Some of them went to Walsham, which was, that was tragic, that was horrible. The Germans were waiting for us there, they had a rough time. And a lot of them got sunk, you know, because they weren't armour plated as such. That's another story, of course.
What about the living conditions aboard on the longer voyages?
Well, the longest voyage that we ever did, I think, was when we went to the Mediterranean, right from Falmouth, well, already from East Ham docks, really, all the way. And you had to be. My job, of course, as a sergeant, was to make sure that they kept the place clean and so forth, because it didn't take long to make it look a mess. And they also had to have the hammocks up straight away. As soon as I got up in the morning, I had to get the hammocks slung up and away. Otherwise, it would move. So that pretty much takes you to be more than that. But yeah, and people live and slept in the best day. Side of it, and it obviously sunk and tide was out, so we went down to look at it. And there's a picture of her behind us there. That's our dinghy at the back. That's all we had, our dinghy there. That's all. That was the one. I was not supposed to take photographs during the war, but I did. That was the LST piece. I took that photograph of her, and we were behind it there. And these various craft going aboard.
If we go back to the years before the war, how much were you aware of what was happening in Europe?
Well, I was aware because my father was recalled. He was axed, as I told you, when they're cutting back the army after between twin wars, and they called him back in 1935, I think. His job was to he was a major. His job was to build up the Territorial Army. So I knew then that something was going to happen. And he was one, he was going all over the country, getting TA units to get them home, buying drill halls and so forth, because they'd all been sold, hadn't they? And they've sold them again now. And so I knew there was going to be a war. And this is why I was very concerned, why I said, well, Sigurd should be armoured, right? To defend ourselves. So I did know, yes, I did know that the war was going to be. Yeah.
Did you have any impression about what the general attitude towards another war would be?
No, not really. I can't remember ever saying, this is terrible, it's going to be a war, I'm going to be a soldier. Yeah. I think when you're young, you do, don't you, really? You probably have second thoughts now. But even now, you see, if this country was attacked, we've got to go to war. What I don't like is what's happening in Afghanistan and Iraq. We're wasting our time, you know, and losing a lot of soldiers. I mean, terrible, really, for young men to go like that, you know, for somebody else's benefit, really. But, I mean, Bush seems to think that it's trying to get rid of terrorism. We never do it that way. Yeah, I think when he antagonised them even more, they just hate them, don't they? And they admit it too. So there we are.